Steve, are you ready to go ahead and do your director's report?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, I wanted to start off today with a legislative update. As you know, the General Assembly is in session, and there are several fishery-related bills that have been introduced this session. So in your notebooks, we have provided bill summaries. These summaries are put together by the Legislative Research Division of the General Assembly for bills, where a summary is available. Not all the bills have a summary, and I'll tell you which ones do and don't as I go through them. Some of them are pretty involved, and so I don't want to read through all the summaries, but certainly we can answer any questions, or at least try to find some answers for you if you do have questions on those. And these may not be the latest up-to-date summaries. These were as of the mail-out, when we put the books together. So, so I think Friday. So they're pretty up-to-date right now. So starting with the Senate, the first bill is Senate Bill 554. You heard this referred to yesterday in public comments, the marine fishery reform. This bill has passed the Senate and has been referred to Committee on Rules, calendar of operations in the House. It is an agency bill that our division has worked on in concert with the agency that basically is a process-oriented reforms for the 1997 Fishery Reform Act. Also includes some law enforcement provisions and things like that, and is part of the department's strategic plan for 2019. Some of the key provisions for that is that it puts the scheduling of fishery management plans within the department as opposed to the division. For efficiency, basically on staff and using staff time, still has the Marine Fisheries Commission as the having input on that process as well. It amends the Marine Fisheries Commission, and I want to explain this a little bit. The current commission, as you know, is made up of three commercial. Two commercial fishing and one commercial industry seat, two recreational and one recreational seat, two at-large and one scientist seat. This bill would replace the at-large positions at the end of the terms. It wouldn't impact anything until those terms were out, but it would replace those with additional scientists. One scientist would be like the first scientist that we have would be a fishery scientist seat, but the other one would be a habitat person with habitat science background. Because of the importance of habitat and water quality that we're looking at growing through our fishery management planning process, and we're also trying to do a better job incorporating our coastal habitat protection plan into a lot of these plans. Another key requirement is to amend the enforcement characteristics. Prior to 2015, it was unlawful to refuse to allow marine fisheries inspectors and wildlife protectors to inspect weapons, equipment, fish, wildlife that the officer reasonably believed to be possessed incident to an activity regulated by our laws. In 2015, this was amended, and we were kind of the baby that got thrown out with the bathwater. Over some, it was actually a bear baiting case, I believe is what it related to. So this would restore those pre-2015 requirements, and would return the law to that. So the So that's that bill, and as I said, there's a bill summary that kind of goes through a lot of what's in that. The next Senate bill is Senate Bill 648, which is to support shellfish aquaculture. This bill passed the Senate, has been referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations in the House. It was based on recommendations from a large group working under the UNC Collaboratory, the Shellfish Mariculture Advisory Committee, or it's also known as SMAC, to develop a comprehensive plan to grow the shellfish industry. And so that bill is making its way. The key things for the division in that is that it authorizes the establishment of shellfish aquaculture enterprise areas, and these would be areas that we could go out as a state agency and designate and then subdivide and then drop people into them, and then if they didn't, if they felt leasing wasn't for them or whatever, then you know, it would revert back to us and we'd put somebody else in there. We see that we see this as a way to maybe control some of the conflict that we see in some of the high use areas, and we do have a lot of conflict, particularly in the south. There's a aquaculture pilot project for Pamlico Sound looking at larger leases up to 50 acres in size, but it's very limited. There's some increase in production and planning requirements. Two of the key things are two moratoriums, one in the Bogue Sound area and one in the Masonboro Myrtle Grove Sound area, and so those are key. For this commission, what would be key would be the I think this is still in here, is the oversight for contested cases. Is that still there? Yeah, okay. So what would happen would be the chair and two other people, one with experience in aquaculture and another with experience in land planning or land use planning, would serve as a oversight board to hear contested cases prior to those cases going to Office of Administrative Hearing, and it would sort of be a go-between administrative remedy so that we don't end up in court right away. And so that's also in this bill. They could still appeal that to that office, but it would be it would have a first stop here, so that's also in the bill. House bill, going over to the House, that's all the Senate bills. Going over to the House is House Bill 169 to make the loggerhead sea turtle, and there is no summary for this bill. This would make the loggerhead sea turtle the state saltwater reptile, and House Bill 598 to make the bottlenose dolphin the state marine mammal. They both passed the House and have been referred to the Committee on Rules and Operations in the Senate. The next bill is House Bill 479. This is a Environmental Review Commission study scope bill. This bill has passed the House and has been referred to the Committee on Rules and Operations of the Senate. And among other things, it provides legislative oversight of marine fishery issues by the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee on Agriculture and Natural and Economic Resources, or you'll hear us refer to it as ANEER or AGNEER. And I believe that's both the division and the commission. House Bill 483, also known as the Let Them Spawn Bill. This bill received favorable report from the House Wildlife Resources Committee and was referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operation in the House. It essentially would require that each fishery management plan for a species is contributed historically and significantly to the fisheries of North Carolina, include a minimum size limit to ensure that 75% of juvenile fish of that species reach maturity and have an opportunity to spawn at least once. So you're looking at essentially what we call a length of maturity of 75% for that bill. And so that bill, so that bill is in Committee of Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. House Bill 486 is commercial license reforms. This bill received favorable report from the House Wildlife Resources Committee, scheduled to go to the House Finance Committee. Because it contains a monetary component, it's not subject to the General Assembly's crossover provisions. The bill contained many of the licensing provisions that this commission has recommended over the past several years. And you can read through through that. We did our only comment on this bill from the division was the impacts to our budget, because if the license fees were to go up at that rate, we thought it would have a negative impact on our commercial license receipts, which usually when we get an increase in licenses, our license sales go down. So, and that's just historically what we know, but we really don't know, you know, what the level of that might be. And that the bill sponsor acknowledged that as well. So, House Bill 545 and Senate Bill 517, the companion, was a bill to protect the military fisheries tourism. These bills would prohibit offshore drilling. The House bill was referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations. Senate bill was referred to the Committee on Rules and Operations of the Senate, and summaries were not available. House Bill 597, the Wildlife Resources Commission amends bill. This bill raises Wildlife Resource Commission license fees, which include our coastal recreational fishing license, because that's one of their licenses. There is a summary for this bill. It's really long. We did not put it in the book, but it is available on the General Assembly's website. But really, the impact to us would be the increase in the cruffle in the coastal recreational fishing license fee. House Bill 809 is a companion, or not companion, but I guess similar to Senate Bill 648, support shellfish aquaculture. Summary is not available for this one. It was referred to the House Committee on Environment. House Bill 810, it's marine fisheries reforms, and while it has the same name as Senate Bill 554 and its House Companion 860, the bill language is different. It was referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations in the House, and the bill sets different FMP standards for migratory stocks managed jurisdictionally, redefines sustainable harvests, including the L75 standard we discussed in House Bill 483, and eliminates the MFC Regional and Standing Advisory Committees. And a summary is not available for this bill, but you can go on the General Assembly site and look at that bill as well. House Bill 860 is the companion to 554. It was also referred to the Committee on Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. And that concludes the summary of all the bills that we've been tracking. So if anyone has any questions on those, I could try to ask.
Questions or comments? Chuck.
On 554, or their companion bill, Section 2.2, making changes to the membership of the MFC, change one of the general knowledge and experience seats to a seat for a habitat, water quality, or ecosystem scientist, and then to have a fisheries, an additional fisheries scientist. can you or the authors of this bill define scientist?
So I think it's the same way we would define the current scientist that we have.
And that is?
Someone with proven experience in science in whatever field that calls for, yeah.
So no advanced degrees, just experience in that general field?
No, I don't think that's part of that. I mean, the intent of this is to balance the commercial and recreational side of the commission with a balance of science as well. So, and we hear this a lot when we go talk to legislators or to a lot of people talking about you need to make your decisions based on science. And so that's, if you look at most commissions, CRC, EMC, that science is engineers, coastal managers, those scientists are represented. Now, they may not be PhDs or professors or whatever, but they have that experience in that. So a
high school dropout with access to Google would be able to be considered a scientist after, studying up on habitat and whatever.
I don't think that would be a demonstrated.
Is there anything now precluding the governor from appointing a person with those qualifications to an at-large seat? Anything at all?
I wouldn't know. Yeah.
Is there anything in here precluding a former employee and retiree of DMF from holding one of these seats?
No.
Okay. Is there anything precluding a PhD at the state university system or Duke or any of the universities within the confines of the state of North Carolina that work very closely with the Coastal Recreational Fishing License Trust Fund, which is now completely controlled by DMF? Is there anything there that would create a conflict of interest?
Possibly. We are we're discussing that with the General Assembly at this time.
Good.
To make that clear and transparent.
I hope so. I feel like that I'm done with my questions, so now I get to pontificate slightly. To have the finest science data on the coast proclaimed by the department is outstanding. Additional scientists, if they are retired, unfortunately, if they are retired DMF employees, will be seen with somewhat jaded eyes. The same would be so for the science seats coming in from universities that have taken, not individually, but have their universities have taken tens of millions of dollars from the Coastal Recreational Fishing License Trust Fund, would definitely be seen as a conflict by the general public, and they have said so much to several, certainly to me and possibly to other commissioners. So this is kind of like taking, again, before the meeting started, Nancy said I like to use the word process a lot. The Fisheries Reform Act and the DMF have always talked about this process, and it has worked extremely well. Not quite as long as the Electoral College, but it has worked extremely well up until the time you got science seats that did not basically vote 100% of the time along commercial lines. But if you're going to have scientists that basically suck at the teat of the Coastal Recreational Fishing License, and you're going to have retired employees of DMF, that will be seen as just another layer of regulatory capture in the management process. So move forward with it. But I certainly, as a commissioner and an individual, cannot support that. I'd love to get into 463, but I'll discuss that with Deputy Secretary Nicholson at a break. Thank you.
Cameron, do you have something?
So I got a few questions about this bill, but the first is, who now represents, in y'all's mind, the resource, the people that take advantage of this resource, not in a commercial or recreational way, the rest of the state, that was in some way encapsulated by the at-large seats? who do you guys see representing those people? Because that's a huge chunk of...
Right. It wasn't a case so much of representation, and there was discussion. There was discussion when we did have a group meeting of actually adding extra commissioners, just adding the science seats in addition to that, which is, you know, that still gets to the same issue. What we're trying to do is bolster the science on what are very complex issues for this, and be somewhat like, you know, the Commission for Health Services as physicians. They have a lot of trained doctors and things
right,
like that on that.
In that context, we have commercial fishermen, we have recreational industry people. We're not doctors. We're not in the medical field, we're in the fishing field. Mm-hmm. So the people that represent the industry in those fields, they represent the industry and have those scientific degrees because that's what that field is. Our participants here, our industry participants, are commercial and rec. So those are well represented. My fear is that when we say we're going to put three scientists, I think that's great to have more science involved. That's really good. But when we lose Tom and we lose Brad, who aren't necessarily in, I mean, I know we're not losing them per se, it'd be at the end of the term, but when we lose that voice, that's an important voice of people that don't have a hand in the pot necessarily and are looking at it objectively. So I've got some concerns about that for sure.
Okay.
Second question is, what was the stakeholder involvement? Because this came out of the division, how did y'all involve stakeholders in y'all's legislative requests?
So this came out of the department as right. part of the department's strategic plan for 2019 to 2021, I believe. And so we were tasked with developing what we thought would be meaningful changes to the process, primarily in scheduling, and trying to tie the proclamation authority, which existed prior to the Fishery Reform Act, back to the management in the fishery management plans, because a lot of times they fight each other. So we started that process 6-7 months ago, probably. Yeah, or more. We met with North Carolina Wildlife Federation. We had them to the division and presented sort of our ideas with this, went around the table kind of to gauge sort of where we had areas of agreement, where we had areas of disagreement. And then worked with the department, and the department shopped that to legislators. We have made some minor changes. Some of the issues have been we wanted to add a for hire, have one of the recreational states be a for hire person, because that's the fastest growing segment we have in that side. We also wanted to make one of the...
What's the fastest growing segment?
The for hire segment. That we have a large number of for hire licenses and for hire captains and a lot of charter. And so and that impact is, can or... depending on what the makeup of the commission be, represented or not represented. We also wanted to sort of require on the commercial side a aquaculture person, because we have that, the commission has that authority over aquaculture. It's also one of the fastest growing segments we have as far as interest and legislative interest. Money, there's a lot of bills that are written about it. But Sam, Commissioner Romano here is an aquaculture person, but doesn't guarantee that for the future. And what we're looking at is long term on this. So we wanted to add that on the commercial side. The recreational folks, North Carolina Wildlife Federation, CCA, didn't like the for hire, so we pulled that off. The the North Carolina Fisheries Association didn't really like the mandatory aquaculture seat, so we pulled that off. So there were some other changes. We made some tweaks in sort of sustainability that we have in there, but some changes we just felt we really couldn't live with, so we worked that way. But this is, like I said, this is now part of the department's strategic plan. It was shopped at the governor's office, and they gave us the go-ahead to move ahead with it.
I guess I'm surprised, though, that in that year-long process, mm-hmm. that this commission wasn't a part of that conversation of what we thought would be beneficial to the commission as well. That would seem like where the very first conversation went. And the reason I bring that up is I had 9 individual legislators call me personally and want to know, was I behind this because it was coming from the department? And I said, I don't have anything to do with this. And then several of their comments were, when y'all met in their offices, there was representatives from the division and from the commission, is what I was told by, you know, that's secondhand. But that was represented there. And so it gives the perception that this is what the commission wants, when we haven't had any input in it, in the process. We haven't signed off and said, hey, I support all the things in here. And so I think that's problematic when we're the rulemaking body and we haven't even had a say in how we're going to dictate the rules.
Well, you're still the rulemaking body.
Right.
All this really does is it says when the fishery management plan, when 1821 is the primary law that was modified here, GS 1821, and all it basically says is the division's role is to develop fishery management plans within that. As you know, the development of fishery management plans is an enormous undertaking. It takes time, money. Stock assessments are huge endeavors, and now we have peer review workshops and all this kind of stuff that is really state of the art. I mean, I'd stack us up anybody in the Southeast on that. Once we start that, we need to control our process. If you go to the ASMFC South Atlantic Council, once those boards, the rulemaking boards, once they hand that task off to the agency, or in that case to the ASMFC or whatever, then they're left to do that job until it's complete. That in the past 8-10 years, that's not been the case here. And so what we're trying to do is control our own process within 1821. We still bring those recommendations back to you. You still have all the rulemaking process. We don't have any rulemaking authority. So it's basically what we're trying to do is control our process. We were asked at the time, would changes in the commission help in that ability? And so we were asked for that. We provided that information. With the change in commissioners, the bill sponsor supported that, and he didn't want to take that out. So I think that what we tried to do, and the reason we didn't come to the commission is what we were trying to do is control our part of this process, which is that FMP development in 1821. And then try to make that that proclamation authority fit better, so that the flexibility that gives us as it pertains to management within an FMP is actually dictated in the FMP. So if you want the variability, you put it in the FMP, use proclamation authority to implement that. Because it tends to get looked at outside of that, and it's been abused by the division in the past. Perfectly honest, we've extended seasons that are not in a plan. You know, flounder, I guess, is a good example in two different occasions where we extended the season into December twice when the plan said to close at the end of November. And so it just it provides a measure of safety for us because it actually is more prescriptive in what we can and can't do. But the bottom line is it gives us control of the process that we're responsible to do. So
rather than like on the technical side, I don't think I have as much of a with what y'all are trying to accomplish. It's more the process by where you got to where it's really hard for when my representative calls me up and says, hey, do you support this bill? To say, yeah, I'm behind it. When we haven't been involved, you know, we haven't been involved in the process. So maybe moving forward, when we have things like this, especially that dramatically, it seems like in that year-long process, you'd involve the commission before it got to legislation. And I understand you don't have to do that by any means, but it'd make it a lot easier for myself personally to buy in and support it at the legislative level when I get those calls if we were involved in that.
Yeah, I understand. I don't know what the level of department was or the governor's office was with the chairman. We ran it to department ran it through the governor's office. So,
and then just my last thing, I'd love it to be on the record. I think the at-large seats are really important. I think they bring a lot to the commission, and they bring an outside people that don't have a hand in the pot. I think that's an important piece there. And so I think to just replace those with folks that I think will also bring something to the pot, you know, to the equation is important, but losing Tom or Brad or whoever their equivalent will be, those guys are valuable, in my opinion.
Okay.
Hello, Tom Stacks.
Oh, yeah.
Good question on 648. And Sammy and others are a lot more familiar with these leases, but under the construct of this bill, and particularly in the water column leases, when we get to 50 acres of tracts and large, or 50 acres of time, does the bill provide, I guess the summary doesn't delineate the rights of the lessees, and I'm thinking of this in terms of property rights, even though these are waters of the state, but and certainly the bottom leases, folks can still take their boat and go fish. But the question is, does this bill make any changes to the rights of the public to traverse those waters, particularly when you get into water column leases? And I don't want to presume what a new bill does or doesn't say. I know where we have been, but I just want to make sure we're not heading in some other direction that would curtail the rights of the general public to traverse the waters, to fish the waters, not to go harvest someone else's product.
Yeah. Again, this is the division participated in this process. I mean, we are part of the Shellfish Mariculture Advisory Committee, but that committee is about 50 people. So water column leases restrict navigation. I mean, it's basic law of physics. that's part and parcel of what we look at when we are looking at water column leases. The 50-acre sites were attempted last year. Right now, you can have no more than 50 acres of leasing, but an individual lease can't be any bigger than 10 acres. Although we do have older leases that are much bigger than that were granted way back when. So as far as the 50-acre project, and Jacob Boyd's here, if I run astray here, because he, I think, participated in that committee, but as far as the 50-acre leases, they're coming from industry who wants to make sizable commitments in investment to grow at scale, right? And so they need more water than 10 acres at a time. And so Pamlico Sound's really about the only area where you can get that without having a lot of problems. But we would anticipate a lot of public comment on these things as far as navigation, because that's navigation, traditional use, those are usually the comments that we get for any Watercom lease. So I don't know if that answered your question directly, though.
But it goes to it. I think the just without seeing the full text of the bill, I'm presuming, is it safe to presume that then the division still then has the same traditional authority to have the hearings and grant those leases? And I'm just trying to figure out what the new bill does or doesn't do relative to dealing with the conflict between the economic opportunities for the lease versus the public's right to use the water.
Yeah, I'm gonna let Jacob answer that. He's the Habitat Enhancement Section Chief and is closer to this than I am now.
Pushed it back.
Like Director Murphy was saying, basically, they would have to meet all the same minimal standards required by statute. It's the pilot studies to see for some of these larger tracts, instead of these guys having to do five different lease applications, which can be time consuming, if it would save time to do one large 50-acre tract under one application. But all the same standards for any other lease would have to be applied.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Chuck, do you have something?
Got a couple. Not unlike Commissioner Boltiz, I've had calls from legislators, including the sponsor of 554, and I think possibly you were at an ASMFC meeting when there was a committee or someone talking about this, and I may be incorrect, but it's my understanding that the MFC liaison actually spoke on your behalf at that supporting 554. And my question would simply be, would there not be a better staff member that could have explained that without the appearance of MFC support for the bill?
I'll be happy to answer that, Commissioner Lockridge. So I wear a couple of hats at the Division of Marine Fisheries. I work for the Division of Marine Fisheries. I am the Marine Fisheries Commission liaison for the division. I'm also the legislative liaison for the division. And I'm a policy advisor to the director also. So in the capacity as the legislative liaison for the division, I attended the meeting. Senators specifically asked for the division to speak on the bill, and I did. So
Was it clear to them that you were speaking for the division only and not for in your capacity as a liaison for the MFC?
I was asked to speak for the division and said that I was speaking on behalf of the division. And
I thank you, so. And don't doubt that a bit. You have to be glaringly evident on what you're doing with legislators, and that's not being disrespectful to any of them, but they have a lot on their mind. The other piece, very quickly, is certainly falling back on there is nothing in the current FRA that would preclude the governor from making any of the appointments that he can make under this new bill. The science is outstanding, but I think the science is certainly not overweighed by members who did not serve long enough, like Commissioner Keith Rhodes. I think Tom Hendrickson is and will be a outstanding commissioner, but I don't see a place for him under this unless he is a eco guy or whatever. He certainly, by his own admission, doesn't fish much. But I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense for this to be part of what the public has referred to as your wish list bill. So it's, again, I'd like to be sitting here as a commission and, you know, make a motion and have it seconded and vote that we support this and send it to the legislature. I think that carries some weight, but I don't see that happening. And again, I'll close simply with everybody at DMF has supported the process for decades, to the point that I say it more than I probably should. But it's worked. It's worked. It does work. But to take a restaurateur, to take a Carteret's Catch member, to take a seafood restaurant guy in Asheville, or to take a mother who likes to buy fish and shrimp when she comes to the coast out of this, is, I don't think you gain that much from the science, two more science seats, unless they're going to be masters or advanced degrees or PhDs in this specific area. And it's going to just be damnably hard to find these folks that, like I say, are not sucking at the teat of coastal recreational fishing license trust funds. I'm done.
Okay. Do you want to respond or you're okay?
No, I'm good. I got right, a lot more to report.
I know you do, but before we do, has everybody said or asked any questions that they wanted to? Okay, great. Before we go further with your report, I've been pointed out by counsel that we just kind of blew past the time slot allowed for public comment that was publicized. Is anybody else that has come in the last little bit that didn't address the commission last night that would like to address them now?